Welcome to the home of Blood, Sweat, and Words, a podcast that empowers writers. My name is Joanne Carson. I'm a fiction and nonfiction author, blogger, and podcaster, and I'm trying to make sense of the writing world today. My weekly show is current, relevant, and above all, honest. Join me, and we'll talk it to the bone. That's what Blood, Sweat, and Words is all about. Welcome to episode 4 on Blood, Sweat, and Words. I'm your host, Joanne Carson, and today I'm speaking with USA Today bestselling author, storyteller, and cheeky wench, Suzanne Tisdale. The topic is hashtag get loud, hashtag stay loud, and that's a mouthful. But before we begin, let me tell you a bit more about Suzanne. Susan Tisdale. Is it Susan or Suzanne?
It's Susan.
Okay, thank you.
That's okay. The Z throws everybody off.
Yeah, it's pretty though. Okay, so Suzanne Tisdale writes Scottish historical romance fiction with honorable and perfectly imperfect heroes and strong, feisty heroines. And bad guys she kills off in delightfully wicked ways. She published her first novel, Layden's Daughter, in December 2011 as a gift for her mother. That one book started a journey which has led to 17 published titles. To date, she has sold more than 350,000 copies of her books around the world. They have been translated into 4 foreign languages, Italian, French, German, and Spanish. And you can find her books in digital, paperback, and audiobook formats. But I have to tell you, she's not only famous for her well-crafted books, she's also famous for her outspoken views on the state of publishing today. She's a leader, in a sense, of the indie resistance. Welcome, Susan.
Thank you.
Did you get your coffee?
And it's over 20 books now, 20 published titles.
Oh, my goodness.
And we're at over 500,000 copies sold. So.
Oh, wow. That's just since the last time you posted your bio.
Yeah, I haven't updated that in a while. I've had a lot of stuff going on, you know?
Oh, yeah. I don't know how you do it all. And congratulations. Those numbers are amazing.
Thank you. I'm kind of proud of them.
I would be, too. I admire the heck out of you, though, because besides being a great writer and having all that success, you take the time to take on the big problems in our writing today. And you keep us informed about the crazy publishing politics that's happening out there. So let's get started. Some people out there don't know about Cockygate. Can you summarize what Cockygate scandal is and what you did about it?
Well, Cockygate all started with an author who decided to trademark the single word cocky. And she also, I have no problem with trying to protect your brand with trademarking certain things. But to trademark just one single word, first of all, you can't do it. I still don't know to this day how it was able to get through the USPTO, the United States Patent and Trademark Office. I don't know how or why that was able to happen. I don't have a clue. There were 3 trademark issues. She was able to get 3 trademarks. She got the trademark for her Cocker Brothers series. She got the trademark for the word cocky as in a specific stylized font, which we found out not long after this all broke out that she was using a font that she did not have permission to use in the trademark. Okay, she had a very limited use license for that specific font. Okay. And then she was able to get a trademark for just the word cocky.
Amazing. She trademarked one word?
Yes, she was able to trademark one word. And what was kind of strange about the whole thing was that the trademark that she asked for the series title, it's my understanding that she didn't even start using that specific series title until after the trademark was granted. So there were lots of issues with the trademark application itself, with the font, and then with the single word. So when this broke, when someone found out, but this is how we found out about it. She started taking, sending out takedown notices to specific authors. Tara Crescent was one of them. There were a couple from Australia who had the word cocky in their book titles. Okay.
So what is a takedown notice?
Meaning, well, not a takedown. It was a cease and desist letter.
Oh my goodness.
She made it appear as though, how do I want to put this? I'm trying to choose my words nicely. It was written in such a manner that one would have believed at first glance that a lawyer had at least, at the very least, helped her write it.
Oh.
Okay. And she started sending these takedown notices, threatening lawsuits. And in the letter, she said, you know, I've talked to my attorney and he says I'm guaranteed to win and blah, 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 blah. Well, it scared the hell out of a lot of people.
Oh, yeah.
And so some of these authors went ahead and listened, and they changed the titles to their books and had to scurry and scamper to change the covers. Now, one of the things she kept saying was it was, you know, basically easy peasy to change the title of a book. Well, I was one of the first ones to call bullshit on that, because if you're an author and you've been in this business for more than 5 minutes, you know it's not easy peasy.
No, it's not.
Because especially if you're wide. I mean, you have to go to each and every single vendor. Well, first of all, you got to get a hold of your cover artist, and he or she has to create a cover for you rather quickly. You got to come up with a new title. You got to recreate create a new cover, et cetera.
Yeah.
But in addition, you know, and then you have to go to all these different vendors and change everything. You've got to upload a new cover. You've got to change the title. You've got to change the metadata. And if you use Vellum, like I do, which a lot of authors do, it's a program to format your books,
right.
You've got to redo that, and you've got to upload all new files. This is not a 15-minute process. This could take days to do.
And money. Yeah.
And money. It's not cheap.
No. Unbelievable.
So we found out about these takedown letters or these cease and desist letters. I'm sorry, I've got pirates on my mind right now. But anyway, I was really, really quiet about the whole thing throughout the whole, you know, the beginning of Cockygate. I mean, I fumed in the background and I didn't say anything. I kept my mouth shut because everybody's saying, just keep your head down, stay out of it. It's none of your business, blah, blah, blah. Well, when I found out that, well, let me back up a little bit. So in the meantime, a wonderful author named Kevin Knupper, and that's K-N-E-U-P-P-E-R. He's a former IP attorney, and so trademarks, patents, that's kind of his forte.
Uh-huh.
He came out of retirement to file a formal protest with the USPTO.
Oh.
And just instantly, you know, fell in love with him on Twitter. He was just freaking amazing. Absolutely amazing.
Yeah.
So fast forward a few weeks, and we find out that Felina Hopkins has decided to sue Tara Crescent and, oh God, what was her name? Ellen or Helen? She wasn't even an author. She was just a woman. She runs a promotion company. So there was this cocky book going around. You know, these authors, this group of authors got together, and they wrote these satirical books. And they put it together as Cocktails, T-A-L-E-S. And it apparently pissed Felina off. So she sued Tara. She sued the woman who promoted the book, you know, this little anthology. And she sued Kevin Knupper.
Oh, wow.
I personally think she was suing Knupper to try and scare him into backing off of his protests with the USPTO, and to keep him from being able to speak publicly about everything that was going on. I know she didn't have any legal standing. It was just a scare tactic. So when I found out about that, I could not remain quiet any longer. I just couldn't.
Yeah.
And I kept hearing in the back of my mind that old adage that says, you know, all it takes for evil to succeed is for good people to do nothing.
Yes.
And I couldn't take it anymore. And I just did a Facebook Live video, and it was my direct message to Felina Hopkins. And the more I talked, the angrier I got, and my mommy voice came out. And it kind of, you know, usually I have a decent enough following on Facebook, but usually if I'm really lucky, you know, 800 views. That video, the last time I looked, has had over 80,000 views.
It was an amazing video. I saw that. It was so emotional and so from the heart.
Well, my whole thing about that was, you know, you're picking on people who don't have the financial wherewithal to stand up to you.
Yeah.
Why aren't you going after, like, Vi Keeland and Penelope Ward for their book, Cocky Bastard? That's been my question since day one. Why didn't you pick the other, well, you know, more successful authors? I mean, that book hit the New York Times bestsellers list.
Yeah.
Okay, Cocky Bastard did. No one had heard of Felina Hopkins until Cocky Gate broke out. No one I knew had ever heard of her.
Yeah.
And so I'd had enough. I was fed up, and I said, you know what? I'm not going to remain quiet. I'm just going to do it. And so I did it, and I begged her, you know, reach out to me. The indie author community is a very forgiving community. We are.
Yeah.
If you make a mistake and you own up to it, you know, if it's an honest, genuine mistake, and you explain to me why you did what you did, and, you know, I can help you work through it, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
But she ended up blocking me everywhere. She blocked me on Twitter. She blocked me on Facebook. So I never did get to have a sit-down with her. I would still love to have a sit-down conversation with her.
That would be good.
But, yeah, no, I doubt that will ever happen.
No. Yeah, it is fascinating that if it was really about the word cocky, that she was choosing the lesser well-published authors to pick on rather than the really well-published authors. So it wasn't about the word. It was about, I don't know what, but yeah.
It was, you know what I think it honestly boiled down to was a publicity stunt. The lawsuit between she and Tara and the other lady has been settled. They reached a settlement agreement. No one knows what is in that settlement agreement. But there's also, you know, a gag order on it, so you can't disclose anything.
Oh, I hope they didn't have to pay her. Yeah.
I don't think that she did. I don't think anybody had to pay her. That's just my personal speculation coming from the paralegal field and watching this whole thing play out. I really don't think that there any money exchanged hands. I did notice the other day that Tara had changed the font on her covers. So I'm thinking that might have something to do with it, but I don't know. I have no personal inside information on that. It's just me, you know, speculating. But what I find interesting about all of this, besides, you know, Felina's hour and 42-minute video rant and then the subsequent videos, she supposedly has written and is producing and directing a movie.
Oh.
She refuses to tell anybody the title of the movie or even what it's about, right?
Interesting. Mm-hmm.
So I have a feeling, and I could be wrong because, you know, I was wrong once before back in long time ago.
Anyway, just the once. Yeah, yeah, I like it.
Just the once. Anyway, I'm thinking that we have not heard the last of Felina, because I think once this, if she really is truly making a movie, I think that once this movie is completed, she's going to resurface again and probably start talking about what was in the settlement agreement, is so that it opens up a new lawsuit and she gets more of the publicity that she so desperately craves.
Well, she sure and, got that.
So I really don't think we've heard the last of her. I really don't.
Oh my goodness. Well, it really.
But she refuses to tell anybody the title because people will steal it. No, we won't. We really don't give a crap, Felina. We just want you to go away forever and ever and ever and ever.
Oh, it's a difficult one. What boy? It's a lot of people were writing about. Well, if you trademark the word cocky, what's next? You know, Highlander.
Exactly. You know. And that's what I said, you know, and then some people, I'm not going to mention names, started trademarking words left and right. One author tried to trademark the word forever. Well, I filed formal protests because I've got two books with the word forever in the title. I've got Forever Her Champion and The Edge of Forever.
Yeah.
It's like, no, you cannot trademark just one single word. Have you learned nothing from Cocky Gate?
Really? Because that takes away our tools as writers. If we can't use words, it's just ridiculous.
Exactly. Exactly. And some guy, he was trying to trademark, and I forget the word. There's a specific word to trademark a, basically a cover outline. Like the Harry Potter covers, I'm sure, are trademarked. 50 Shades is probably trademarked. Which I understand.
Yeah.
I understand. Yeah. Because those are really well-known big books. But this guy tried to trademark, and I can't remember the term. Forgive me. It's been a rough week. and it's only Wednesday. But it was just like an outline. He was trying to trademark a cover so that nobody could use a cover with a person, an alien, a humanoid or whatever, holding any kind of weapon.
Oh my goodness! There's all and kinds I'm like, of those.
No. So that one fell to the wayside. That one, people started protesting left and right, and so yeah, I think that one is gone, and I think forever is gone. But there's still some out there that I really worry about, like the word shifter. Somebody's trying to trademark the word shifter. No, oh. You can't do that. You can. I don't care if you want to trademark your series name. I got no problem with that. Yeah. Go ahead. If that trips your trigger and makes you feel be able to sleep at night, go ahead.
Yeah.
But so many times I heard, well, I'm trying to protect my brand and I'm not going to enforce it. Well, if you're trying to protect your brand and you're not going to enforce it, mm-hmm. that makes absolutely no sense to me. Why would you spend thousands of dollars on a trademark if you're not and if you don't enforce it, it's not valid.
No. Well,
you have to enforce it in order for the trademark to stand.
Absolutely.
And that's what these people just simply, you couldn't explain it to them that way. They just didn't get it. They thought if they had the trademark, they could pick and choose who they allowed to use that word. And it doesn't work that way. For instance, Disney, and everybody threw a fit about this. This was years ago, mm-hmm. where a daycare center somewhere had a Disney mural on their daycare. Well, they didn't have Disney's permission to use it. So Disney sued them to get that mural off the wall because they didn't have permission to use it. Well, people threw a fit and it's like, no, they had to enforce it because if they didn't, their trademark is null and void. Additionally, they don't want anybody to think that Disney supports or whatever sponsors this particular daycare. They had nothing to do with this daycare. And good Lord, if something had happened and a lawsuit would have come up, whoever the plaintiff was, whoever was going to be filing the lawsuit could feasibly go after Disney because they have the deeper pockets, because it made it look like Disney sponsored or supported this particular daycare.
Yeah, I totally get that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But this is like a whole den of snakes been opened up by mm-hmm. this Cocky Gate, and I really hope it goes away. But I don't know. There just mm-hmm. seems like there's a bit of echo there.
Yes.
So,
I don't foresee it going away anytime soon.
Oh dear.
Well, or not on a permanent basis.
That's just so sad because it is a friendly environment. The indie world of writers is a friendly environment, and I'm sorry to see this sort of kick up. Another issue you're on top of is book stuffing. Can you explain what book stuffing is?
Oh God, I hate book stuffers. I really do. Okay, so All right. So for years, okay, Amazon's terms of service have always stated basically that you couldn't stuff a book. And what that means is there were hundreds upon hundreds upon hundreds of books in the Kindle Unlimited program at Amazon. Mm-hmm. And what they were doing was, it would, on the face of it, at first glance, it looks like you are purchasing just one book, right? Mm-hmm. Because the cover just says the title of the book. Okay. It doesn't mention that there are any bonus novellas, stories, whatever, in addition to the main story that's listed on the cover, right? Mm-hmm. So what these stuffers were doing was, okay, in Kindle Unlimited, the author gets paid for each page read by a reader. Mm-hmm. So the more pages read, the more money you get, right?
Right.
So they were creating, these stuffers were creating these books that were 3,000 pages long. And but they weren't telling anybody that there was bonus content in the book. So you would open up this book and you would read like a very short novella. Some of these only were only 10 to 12% of the entire content of the file, right?
Unbelievable.
So 10% of what you're getting is the actual book you purchased. The remainder, it was just nonsense. It was just one story after another, at just to stuff it to make it as big as they possibly could.
And, okay? And we're not talking excerpts. We're talking whole other books.
No, we're talking whole stories. Right. Excerpts are completely fine. That does not go against Amazon's terms of service, as long as it doesn't exceed 10% of the total book's content. You're okay.
Right.
So if you've got a book that, you know, a story, you published it, and let's just say it's 500 pages long, you can have an additional 50 pages.
Right.
Of excerpts from the, you know, for instance, the next book in your series, or, you know, your next book that's coming out, what have you. They weren't doing that. Nowhere in the, on the cover, in the book description, nowhere did it mention there was bonus content. Well, we'd been complaining about this for years, seriously, 3 years we've been complaining about stuffers.
Right.
Well, author Chance Carter got into a lot of trouble. This is what started it. It was called Tiffany Gate. And what he was doing, what he was doing was advertising and telling people, download my book, leave a review, and you can win Tiffany Diamonds, a Tiffany shopping spree.
Oh my
from
goodness.
The store, the actual store, Tiffany's, right? Well, you can't do that. That's buying a review, and that's against Amazon's terms of service. You
Absolutely.
Can't buy reviews.
Right.
So, so Tiffany Gate explodes not long after Cocky Gate, and I didn't remain silent on that because it just, we had been fighting it for years. Here's what he was also doing. And he says he wasn't, but we've got the screenshot evidence. We've got the evidence to prove that's not true. So what was happening was he had hired some virtual assistants, and what they were doing was buying up hundreds of copies of these books and sending them out to readers, or they were buying hundreds upon hundreds of dollars worth of Amazon gift cards to give to people to go buy the book.
Oh, to jack up the sales.
To jack up the sales, exactly. Well, what else they were doing, they were teaching readers, okay, here's what you need to do. You go download Chance's new book in your, you know, in the Kindle Unlimited program, and flip to the very end. You don't even have to read it. Just flip to the very end so Chance can get paid. So Chance can eat this month.
Oh,
what nobody knew was that for every time they do that, for these, for example, a 3,000 page book equaled $13 to $14.
Wow.
Okay. So if someone flipped, you know, read the whole book, that author gets $13.
That's a lot. Yeah.
That's a lot of money compared to my 700-page book or my 500-page book. And they were buying up ads left and right. They were just, it's called, the process is called surround and suffocate. It's actually a legal marketing ploy that not just authors use, but big companies everywhere use. That's mm-hmm. why you'll see a Starbucks on both street corners in big cities, like 100 Starbucks in like five blocks. Okay. They do that so nobody else can come in and open up their own coffee shop, right?
Oh,
so
I
that's
see.
What they were doing with the advertising. They were buying up all these ads and bidding the ads at exorbitant prices, and so that all you saw, like if you went to my actual Amazon book page mm-hmm. and clicked on one of my books, the advertising were all these, you know, Spank Me Daddy, I've Been a Bad Girl books, or, you know, Menage a Trois books. I've got nothing against erotica, don't get me wrong, got nothing against it. But I just couldn't figure out what the hell
that's not what you
Spank
write.
Spank Me Daddy books had to do with Scottish historical romance.
Yeah, right. It's not the same thing. No.
Because they were putting in thousands of keywords. So for instance, if you went to Amazon and just typed in, say, patio umbrella, mm-hmm. one of their books was going to show up at the top of the search because they had outbid anybody else who was trying to purchase ads with Amazon.
Oh my goodness.
So nobody could see us. So we not only were we hidden because we couldn't compete with the AMS ads, the amounts of money that they were spending,
right.
but they were constantly in the top 100 in every single flipping category that you could possibly think of. They were in the top 100. So nobody could see the legitimate authors. Now, I say legitimate, and by that I mean we actually wrote our damn books.
Yeah.
We took the 3 to 6 months to actually sit down and write the book.
Yeah.
They were hiring ghostwriters. Again, I got nothing against ghostwriters. I've talked to lots of them. My heart breaks for them. I understand their reasoning for doing what they do. Because, you know, it's amazing what the fear of starvation and freezing to death will get a human being to do. Right?
Yeah.
So some of these, not all, but a lot of these ghostwriters were desperate financially. So,
yeah.
You know,
I
the Chance no Carters and...
This. Yeah.
They were all buying up these ghostwritten stories, and they would teach other authors in their little circle of deceit, Dante's eighth level of hell, that just hire ghostwriters, give them the plot, let them write it. You don't even have to edit it. You don't have to spell check it. Don't do anything. Just flip and upload it.
Aww.
And then you teach your readers how to flip to the end of the book, and you've got anywhere from 10 to 13 bucks per book read. And wow. And nobody's actually reading the books. They're flipping to the end.
And then you do this surround and suffocate.
Yes. I've learned so much in the last 6 to 8 months. It's not even funny. More than I really wanted to know.
Well, it's really a dark side of the whole writing world, because the rest of us are out there trying to create art, and these people
exactly.
are just fudging it all up.
Exactly. And so what they also do, okay, so we're just going to say author Jane Doe, mm-hmm. okay, has 10 pen names that she writes under. Mm-hmm. Someone signs up for author Jane Doe's newsletter. Okay?
Yeah.
What author Jane Doe does is share that information with all her other pen names, because she's just one person.
Right.
What she also does is she will put these books together with stories from her other 10 pen names. And they just rotate them. It's the same damn 11 stories in the same 11 books. They're just
a
new cover and
it.
Rearranging it.
Yeah, well, I don't see how they can keep doing it. When you contacted Amazon, what did they say?
They said that goes against the terms of service. So luckily, thank you, sweet be Jesus, once we started our Twitter campaign and started tagging Amazon and KDP Publishing and everything else in our tweets and sorry. swallowed my coffee wrong, excuse me.
That's okay.
Once we started tagging them in our tweets mm-hmm. and on Facebook and doing our open letters to Jeff Bezos, they finally started paying attention.
Oh, good.
And they did, Chance Carter lost his account. dozens upon dozens of contemporary romance authors lost their accounts.
Fantastic.
Now, what I kept hearing was, oh, this is hurting innocent authors. Innocent authors are getting their accounts shut down. So I did a video and I said, if you're a truly innocent author who has been hurt by this, reach out to me. If it's true, I will go to bat with you. I will call my rep. I will do another letter to Bezos. I will do whatever I have to help you.
Mm-hmm.
So I started getting these Facebook private messages from these authors going, I was one of the innocent authors hurt and my account was shut down and I have no idea why. And they didn't tell me. Just all of a sudden I tried to sign onto my dashboard and it wouldn't work and blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. Only to find out, because it only took 5 minutes worth of digging, that the people who were reaching out to me as supposed innocent authors were stuffers.
They were
the stuffers and the scammers. And so I'm like, no, I'm not helping you.
No way.
And they were trying to go to RWA as well, say we're innocent. Well, no, the RWA had them on their radar for a long time, and they knew better.
Oh, good. Yeah, now I did hear rumors that there were people, innocent people hurt, but yeah, that's too bad.
I'm going to tell you that in my experience, every time I hear innocent author hurt in mm-hmm. every single solitary circumstance, they were lying. They were stuffers. They were book scammers, book stuffers. So they were not innocent, because I would be the first one. If you were truly, truly hurt by this, then I would step up to the plate and I would go to bat for you.
Oh,
now,
I know you would. Yeah.
There truly were innocent authors hurt by the book stuffers. And
yes.
Here is how. So the book stuffers, one of the things they wanted was, visibility was the key thing. They just wanted visibility, visibility, visibility. So one of the things that they wanted more than anything was to show up on legitimate authors, also bots. That's where, on the book page, it'll say customers who bought this book also bought this book.
Right.
Okay. So what they were doing was they would send out in their, to their 50,000 newsletter subscribers an email saying, for instance, so-and-so, I'll just use Catherine Levesque as an example. She's my bestie. I love her. a lot of her books are in Kindle Unlimited. She's like a KU queen.
Yeah, absolutely.
They would say, okay, Catherine Levesque has a free book in KU. Go download it today. It's awesome. So because these people had already purchased, for instance, Chance Carter's book, and they went and bought Catherine Levesque's book
mm-hmm.
and read it,
mm-hmm.
that would show a huge spike in your pages read. Just all of a sudden, out of nowhere, you have a huge spike in your pages read, and you haven't run any ads. You haven't done anything differently. Well, Amazon's, bots would pick it up and say, there's a problem here. We suspect you're using ClickFarms. And the authors haven't done a damn thing. So that's how truly innocent, legitimate authors were hurt. So Amazon would say, well, we're going to not pay you for your pages read this month.
Oh,
yeah.
Nasty.
So, and that was all because of the stuffers,
right.
The scammers.
Right. So the clean.
I got other words for them, but I won't repeat them.
Not here. No. Oh, my goodness. So your hashtag get loud, hashtag stay loud.
Okay.
So, yeah.
So that was actually started by author Bianca Summerland.
Mm-hmm.
She's out of Canada. Just an adorable, adorable young lady. I just adore her. She started it. And so I'm like, hey, I'm going to use that. And she's like, go for it. So whenever we were talking about Cocky Gate or Tiffany Gate or book stuffers or anybody that was gaming the system, we would use the get loud, stay loud.
Perfect.
And then we would tag Amazon. And that's how we got a lot of these scammers, stuffers shut down. Now, the problems are still rampant. It is by no means over. Historical romance is just... Oh, it's awful.
Oh.
It is absolutely awful. They have taken down a few of them, but not in the same numbers as they did the contemporary authors. So we're still fighting. We're still having to report. There's still scamming going on. There's still stuffing going on. Yeah. What they like to do in historical romance, you open up the book and it'll say, surprise novella, click here. Well, then you've just, you know, gone through, you know, a 250-page book without reading it, and now you're at the bonus content, which they have to list on the cover, and it's got to be in the book description. Okay, so when you click on that book, it clearly shows on the cover, bonus content, book collection, anthology, whatever, to signify that there is more than one story in this book, one more complete story, and it has to be listed in the book description that you read. You know, it's about, you know, star-crossed lovers, blah, blah, blah. In addition to that story, you also get, you know, stories X, Y, and Z.
Right. That's only fair.
They're still not doing that. They're still stuffing.
Well, and at one point, you thought of taking your books out of KU. Have you taken your books out of KU?
Oh, my books haven't been in KU in forever.
Oh, my goodness.
Because of these issues.
Right.
And I personally don't think KU is sustainable as it is currently set up. I don't foresee it. They have to keep pumping millions of dollars into the KU program every month.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. And my worry was my books, when I first started writing, I was a KDP princess. This is when it was Kindle, KDP Select.
Right.
And, you know, you're exclusive to Amazon. Anytime someone borrows one of your books, you get paid anywhere from $1.72 to $2.17.
Right.
And people, you know, if you were a Prime member, you could borrow up to, like, what was it, 2 books a month or 3 books a month?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I was a KDP princess. I made buttloads of money. I was making, seriously, $35,000 a month on average off of 3 books.
Oh my goodness. That's amazing.
The moment, the same month that they launched Kindle Unlimited 1.0, and that's where you had to read 10% of the book in order to be paid for it.
Right.
Okay. I went from $35,000 a month down to $3,400 in one flipping month.
Oh my goodness.
That hurt. And I'm like, okay. So I immediately took my books wide, and I knew it was going to hurt financially. It was already hurting financially.
Yeah, it was.
But I knew I had to build those relationships with the other vendors, because I finally realized, if we don't support iBooks, Kobo, Nook, Google Play, those vendors,
mm-hmm.
and they go out of business, then Amazon is the only dog left in town, and we will be forced to take whatever scraps they want to throw our way.
Yeah.
And so that's why I don't do any more AMS ads. When I do Facebook ads or Twitter ads, I don't direct anybody to Amazon. I direct them to Nook, I direct them to Kobo, or I direct them to iBooks.
Wow. Okay. So,
and I make damn good money.
And you still, your books are so good. That.
Oh, thank you.
It's nice to have a happy ending to that. Not everyone could do that. That, which is why it's so inspiring to see someone with your talent and your sales leading the way. Because otherwise, Amazon would be the only dog in town, and we would be making even less.
Yes, exactly. So I'm happy to be wide. I have experimented a few times. Over the last couple of years, I've taken, you know, an entire series and put it back into KU to see, you know, to see what would happen. And every single time, I lose money.
Really?
I lose money. I don't make enough in Kindle Unlimited to make up the sales that I've lost at the other vendors.
Oh, my goodness. That's really good. Yeah.
Until they change it drastically, my books won't be in KU. They just won't. Now, I do have, like, a German translated version of The Edge of Forever that I believe I do have in Kindle Unlimited.
Mm-hmm.
It does okay, but not anywhere near what I used to do. So,
yeah.
But I still, when I went wide, I was really concerned about how bad it was going to hurt financially to go wide. But again, it already hurt financially that first month. So, but I still that year made more money that year than I had the year before.
Oh, good.
By going wide.
Good.
So, and I still make more money every year. I haven't lost, I haven't gone back at all. So I've got a really nice six-figure income.
Nice. But you, mm-hmm. you really jumped off the cliff there, because a lot of people are afraid to leave Amazon and go wide. So you were taking a lot of risks.
And I understand the reasoning behind that. Now, I'm not, I think Kindle Unlimited, the idea of it is a good one. I love the idea of this massive library where people can go in and borrow books. I do love it. Mm-hmm. I love that, the thought behind it. I think it's a wonderful idea. I just don't think it's implemented wisely.
No, I think it's on our backs, you know.
Exactly.
And so,
yeah. I think for a brand new author who wants to, depending on what genre you're in, and you're trying to gain a lot of readers quickly, I think KU is a good program.
Oh, definitely. Get your name out there. Yeah.
I've got some friends who are just killing it in KU.
Oh.
Just killing it. I mean, I wouldn't want to give up $50,000, $60,000, $70,000, $80,000
a month.
No. On principle. I mean, you got people to feed. You're running a business. This is a business.
Yes.
This is, you know, you're not in this just for giggles, you know, when you're making that kind of money.
And it's a lot of
work. It is a business. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, but the problem that I personally see with some of my author friends who are in KU, who I will not mention, and some are close and some are just acquaintances, you know, just people that you talk to.
Mm-hmm.
They have to put out a new book every 6 to 8 weeks just to maintain what they made the month before.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's just this vicious cycle. And I just, they still write really great books, but I that's one gerbil wheel I just don't want to get on.
No. And you
so, I mean, I only put out a couple of new books a year. Yeah. And I still make really good money because I've got audiobooks, I've got paperbacks, I've got all the ebooks, I'm wide. My foreign translations do quite well.
So multiple income streams, but you also write
multiple income streams.
Books.
Exactly.
Yeah. So your Facebook segments just knock me over when you come on Facebook Live. Are you going to continue those?
Yeah, I'll continue them as long as there's pirates out there and people trying to scan the system. Hell yes.
Oh, awesome. Because you really keep us informed. That must take a lot of time to gather all that information. And
you know, it used to, but now it only takes a matter of minutes because something really sweet and precious has happened. The moment somebody discovers something, they immediately message me on Facebook. Hey, did you see this? And I'm like,
fantastic.
Oh, crap.
Yeah.
And then within minutes, I've got 15 people all messaging me with the same thing.
Right.
And so I don't, you know, I still research it. It might take me a half an hour to an hour to make sure that what I'm reading is correct. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's no misinterpretation or anything. But the information is so, it's lightning fast now. So it's not like this is all I do all day long. Go look for stuff. It's people keeping me informed.
And you become
because for whatever reason, they've made me the leader of the indie author resistance. And it's just because I've got a really big mouth.
Well, and you say it well. I really appreciate it. What do you recommend the rest of us writers do about the politics? What do you have any advice there?
Don't let the politics eat at your heart, because the politics is just another way of Satan screwing with your head. That's number one. Number two, just keep writing, because eventually, and it might take a while, but eventually things will work out. They always do. I don't believe anything that we're facing right now. I don't believe the book stuffers or the pirates are the end of life as we know it. So all that you can really truly do is be genuine and be honest. Continue to write. Make sure your number one goal with every book should always be it is written better than the last book you wrote.
Mm-hmm.
Hone your craft. stay away from negative Nellies. If you're hanging out with people and all they do is bitch all day long about X, Y, and Z, this, that, and the other, then, and, you know, doomsday and blah, 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 you need a new set of friends.
Right. You need support.
You have to, this industry is not for the faint of heart. You have to gird your loins every hour of every day.
Yes.
And, that's one of the workshops that we're going to be having at my Write Like a Pro conference next June. How to ignore all the negativity and just focus on your craft.
So important.
Because it's really important.
That is such great advice. It really touches my heart. Wow. Turning more towards your award-winning books, when did you first fall in love with historical romance?
Oh, my gosh. Okay. I had never read a romance novel in my life. All I had ever read was what my mother read, and she read Ed McBain, James Patterson, Nora Roberts, any murder mystery, any thriller, any political spy novel, whatever, that she could get her hands on. That's what she read.
Uh-huh.
And so that's what I read. Mm-hmm. I just read whatever she did. And my mother would go to the library every 2 weeks, and they would let her check out upwards of, you know, as many books as she wanted. And she would read them. She would read like 20 books in 2 weeks.
Oh,
just devoured books.
Right.
And so I read whatever she had checked out from the library. Or one of our favorite things was to go to like Goodwill or Salvation Army, mm-hmm. and get books for a nickel. That was our thing. I mean, we just read and read and read. So my husband, uh-huh. So my husband, God love him, back in 2010, had given me a Kindle for my birthday.
Ooh.
And I was, at first I'm like, I don't want a Kindle. I want to hold the real book. I like the way it smells, blah, 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 blah. Yeah. After about 3 minutes, I was just immediately addicted. It was like cocaine.
Yeah.
The poor soul didn't understand my love of reading. He had connected my Kindle to his credit card. So I was buy now, click, you know, whatever, click here to buy now. And that one click button. And after the first month, he comes to me with these big eyes and astonished look on his face going, Sizzy, we have to talk. So I was working a day job at the time, right? I was selling insurance. And, so he put me on Book Rations. So I went, someone on Facebook said, you know, I found this free book at Amazon. I'm like, oh, okay. So everything was set up differently back then, how you found free books. And I clicked on something wrong and I found some free historical romance novels. And I thought, well, for, you know, poopies and giggles, I'll check one out. Well, it was one of Lauren Wittig's novels.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I can't remember which one. I think it was Taming of the Shrew or something like that. But it was a Scottish historical romance. And I'm telling you what, from the first paragraph of that book, I was hooked. Just hooked. And I went and found every free Scottish historical romance that I could find. And then I was very careful about, you know, who I purchased and whatever. The money I spent. So I was finding all these free 99-cent books and just devouring them and falling in love. So I've always written and like mysteries and thrillers and stuff like that. But I never submitted anything to any publisher or anything like that because I'd heard how hard it was to get, you know, published and I didn't think I was good enough.
Oh my goodness.
So my mother, loving to read as she does, I thought that it would be cool to give her a Kindle for her birthday.
Right.
And I thought it would be hilarious if when she opened it up, the first and only book on there was something I had written.
Ah.
So I'm addicted to Scottish historical romance at this time, and I kept having this idea for a book, just would not leave my head. So I started writing Leighton's Daughter. And I didn't tell my husband what I was doing. We only had one computer. It was an old Dell desktop.
Mm-hmm.
And I started getting up at 3:30 every morning to write before I went to my day job. Well, he thought I was getting up to play Farmville. So I'm writing this book no editor, no nothing. I got nothing. So I'm writing this book, and I thought I had it hidden on the computer, but my husband stumbled on it and asked me what I was doing. So I told him, and I said, I think there's a cord. I'm such a techno geek. I think there's a cord that I can get that goes from the Kindle to the computer, and I could just load it, this book, when I'm done with it, onto the Kindle for Mama. Mm-hmm. He said, well, let me research it. Now, my husband, God love him, he's a carpenter, mm-hmm. and he's one of the most brilliant men I've ever met in my entire life. This guy is smart mm-hmm. on a lot of different things. Mm-hmm. So he's like a research savant. If you want to know, does a bumblebee have nipples, you call my husband and he will research the hell out of it for you.
Perfect.
So he comes back to me a few days later and he says, there is no cord, but there's this thing called Kindle Direct Publishing. You need to do it that way. Publish the book and then you can, you know, get your mom's Kindle and you can buy it and put it on there. Mm-hmm. I'm like, okay, nobody's going to read it anyway.
Oh my goodness.
I wrote this book and I had some friends help me edit it. And it was that first version. I don't know how it became as successful as it did. But I published it in December of 2011. Uh-huh. And by the first or second week of February of 2012, it was number 3 at Amazon.
Oh,
like,
my goodness.
I don't know. I don't know anything. I didn't even think about a cover, honest to God. Oh. I did not think about a cover until I was uploading it at Amazon. And so I went and slapped a cover together really fast. Oh. I had no editor. I had no final proofer. I had no cover artist. I had nothing. So... I didn't know what I was doing. I didn't have a flipping clue what I was doing. So I'm selling like 450, 500 copies of this book a day.
Oh, my goodness.
And so I had made the mistake of going into a group, you know, joining a group on Facebook for indie authors and asking that question. Is selling 450 to 500 copies a book a day good? I don't know. This is my first book, and that's how many I'm selling, and I don't know if this is good or not. It was a resounding, bitch, you need to leave. Because we don't sell that many in a year. I'm like, oh, okay. So I kept thinking, Amazon has made a mistake. They're going to call and say we want our money back. So... And then in the meantime, people are finding me on Facebook going, when's the next book out? When's the next book out? And it's like, crap, I got to write another book. I was already working on Findley's Last, but I was just so excited that they wanted another book of mine. Fast forward a few months, I get an email from Amazon and I'm like, oh crap.
What
and then
I
read
now?
It. I'm like, oh, this has got to be someone. At this time, I think it was Catherine Levesque pulling a fast one on me.
Oh, you knew her by
then.
Because
in the meantime,
okay.
She had friended me and we were starting to become really good friends on Facebook. But anyway, he says, you know, hello, my name is Chris and blah, blah, blah. I'm with Amazon and I'd love to schedule a call with you. And I'm like, oh, God. So I replied with, ha ha, cat, really funny. And he responded with, no, I'm serious. I'm really with Amazon, Kindle Direct Publishing. And we really want to talk to you. And I'm like, oh, crap, here it comes. They're going to want their money back. So I scheduled I took the phone call. And I was just shaking the whole time because I'm thinking that and it wasn't, you know, billions of dollars or anything. But I was just so proud of myself because, you know.
Yeah.
Hundreds of dollars, you know.
Oh, yeah.
So they didn't want their money back. They were coming to me saying, okay, you've done really well. We want to give you a personal, you know, a KDP rep. And I'm like, okay, I didn't know what that meant either. I just thought anybody who sold books at Amazon had a KDP rep.
Oh my
goodness. So fast forward like 8 months, somebody asked something on Twitter and I said, well, why don't you just call your rep? And they're like, what rep? And I said, you know, the one Amazon gives you when you publish. And again, they're like, oh. And it was Laura Howard. And she said, Susie, call me. I'm like, what? Doesn't everybody have one? And she's like, oh, how can you be so successful when you don't have a flipping clue what you're doing? And I didn't.
I just
kept writing books and publishing and people kept buying them. And, you know, I didn't know.
that's such a good story.
Now I know. But it was sometimes, it was just... I call it my accidental journey, but you know, I didn't mean to. I kept saying that a lot. I didn't mean for that to happen. It just did. So
your mom must be so proud. I mean, the original.
Oh, she was so proud of me.
For her.
I did tell her before I gave her Kindle. I said, okay, Mama, this is what I'm doing. Because it was, you know, I had mentioned it to someone on Facebook and it kind of exploded from there. This is before Layden's Daughter was even published. So I thought, well, I need to let Mom know what's going on because family members were asking. So I printed off the entire manuscript and I took it down to her and I said, Mama, I'm writing a book and or I have written this book and I'm getting ready to publish it. Here's the manuscript and I'd like you to read it. It's a romance. It's a historical romance. And she kind of rolled her eyes. And she said, is there any lustful thrusting? And keep in mind, this is a 70-some-odd-year-old woman. And my daughter was standing there. And I thought Emily was going to choke to death on her coffee. It was like out of a sitcom. Because coffee was coming out of Emily's nose. And my mother looks at her and says, what? You think I've never thrusted lustfully before in my life? I have three children. I'm like, oh, Mom, just stop. So I give her the book and I said, you know, please read it. Let me know what you think. So I come back the following weekend to visit. And I said, so what did you think, Mama? And she said, well, it was pretty good, but it really needed some more lustful thrusting. It was just not dirty enough. I'm like, oh, my God. So, yeah, but I didn't like writing sex scenes and I still don't. Mm-hmm. I still don't. So my books are relatively tame compared to a lot of others.
Right.
So, but I mean, honestly, I'd never heard of Diana Gabaldon. I had never heard of Julie Garwood. I had never heard of any of these people. And in some of my reviews, people were saying things like, it was funny, like a Julie Garwood book. And then other people were saying, well, this is nowhere near as good as the Diana Gabaldon book. And I'm like, well, who the hell are these people? And so I went to look and I'm like, oh, I'm being compared to them. Thank you.
Oh, my goodness. Talk about a shot to fame. Holy smokes.
Yes. And I haven't looked back since.
But you're still humble. That's what's so great. You know,
you know, I look at it this way. Everybody poops. I mean, I'm sorry. Yes. That's the only way I can describe it. We are, like I used to tell my kids, you are unique and special just like everybody else. Everyone has their own spiritual gift or gifts. Some of us, either by luck or by chance or by fate or by sheer will and determination, use those spiritual gifts that the good Lord has given us. Others don't, or they don't understand what their spiritual gift is. Now, it could be you're artistic. You can paint. You're musically inclined. You can sing and play instruments. Like my husband, you're a carpenter and you can build really awesome things. Or you're a sculptor. Or you're a doctor or a nurse. You have a servant's heart. Whatever. Everyone has a spiritual gift. I have been blessed enough that I have been able to put this in it. It is divine intervention. People say, where do you get your ideas from? It's like, it's either insanity or divine intervention. I don't know which, but I tend to think it's divine intervention.
So
I'm just blessed in that I was able to take this talent for storytelling, which I actually didn't realize until after my mother died and I became closer to my dad that I actually get my storytelling abilities from my dad. I get my creativity from my mom. Mm-hmm. But my dad can tell you a story that will make a grown man want to pee his pants or will have you rolling on the floor with such laughter that you think you're going to have a stroke. Yeah. This man can tell a story and he tells them. He doesn't write them. He just tells them. But He just kills me. Like a few months ago, we were out to lunch. This out of nowhere, he says, you know, if the good Lord made anything better than a woman, I don't know what the hell it is. So yeah.
Yeah. You come by it honestly. But
I do come by it honestly. That is true. Yeah,
but you didn't know. You had no idea that your gift would be historical fiction. I mean, that's so cool.
I didn't know that my gift was going to be storytelling in whatever form that it is. in that I would actually, with my story, because I don't write what they used to call bodice rippers.
Right.
I don't write like that. My books always have a mystery to them. There's always some kind of darkness, whether it's alcoholism or rape or insanity or what have you. There's always something that at least one of my characters has to overcome. And I did not realize that, like, Frederick's Queen was the one that really showed me how writing books can touch someone's heart or touch someone's life. Because that dealt with rape. Mm-hmm. And I did not pull any punches in that book. I don't pull punches in my books. But I had more people reach out to me after Frederick's Queen going, you know, I was raped, you know, whenever, and it has taken me years and years and years. I'm still not, you know, over it, and, you know, I'm still in counseling, whatever. But the hope you gave me in Frederick's Queen has changed my life.
Oh, my goodness.
And that has touched me. And, I mean, I've gotten lots of emails. And then Bergen's Promise, that one dealt with alcoholism. And I had a lot of people reach out to me saying, you know what, you nailed it on the head. Because I have experience with, you know, alcoholic family members. So so I was drawing from my own personal experience and their personal, you know, the alcoholic's personal experience.
And it reached them. It reached the heart.
Yes, and I've had countless nurses reach out to me and say, you nailed it, exactly. Especially when Marguerite was going through the what we call today the DTs, but mm-hmm. I couldn't use that term for 14th century Scotland, so mm-hmm. I called them the takeaways. Oh. And, you know, what happens to your body when you take something you're addicted to away.
Right.
Okay, so... So that made me feel really, really good.
Well, when you're really writing, good. Does that for people? That's just so empowering. That must fuel you on to write even more.
Oh, it does. It absolutely does. And I just, it still, you know, to this day boggles my mind that I'm able to, you know, help people or touch them in a positive way or make them think or reconsider, a preconceived notion that they might have had.
It's a gift. It's a
or just
gift.
Entertain them for a few hours, you know, yeah. Just entertain them, take them away from reality. Cause there are some days reality just sucks. All you got to do is turn on this, you know, the news and find that out. So I think we all need to escape, but I'm proud of the fact also that I have a lot of male readers.
Do you?
Yes, I do. That's awesome. A lot of male readers, and they reach out to me too. Uh-huh. And they're like, and that's one of the reasons I did a recent, I'm still in the process of revamping my covers, taking the couples off the covers.
Oh.
Is because I wanted to appeal to a wider audience and I wanted to pick up even more male readers. Oh. Because, yes, romance is a central theme in my books, mm-hmm. but there's more to it than just the romance. There's the mystery, there's the intrigue, there's the murder, there's the attempted murder, there's the, you know, political intrigue and the historical intrigue and things of that nature. And so that was one reason for revamping them.
What are you currently working on?
Maintaining my sanity.
That's a good one.
I got so
How's
much
that
going
for you?
It's not even funny. Oh my gosh. Right before you called this morning, I had totally forgotten we were doing this today because I'm telling you, it's just nuts. In fact, what time is it? Okay. I actually have lunch with my tax attorney and my accountant at 11:45 today. But anyway, I'm going to IndieScribe in October. And that is the most fun conference. I love going
That's
to IndieScribe. It's in Burbank every year. It is just an absolute blast. So this year we're doing, I'm in charge of the opening night.
Oh, no.
And instead of a DJ and, you know, just dancing all night, we're doing a murder mystery / escape room event.
Oh, no way.
Oh, my gosh. Oh. So what I was doing when you called this morning, when I was still in my robe and still had my parrot head, paired hair. I was working on the character sheets and their secrets and stuff. Yeah.
Oh, that sounds like so much fun.
Oh, yeah. It's going to be a flipping blast. And I've got my niece and her bestie, Tracy, helping me and working on the clues and the puzzles. Oh, my God. The puzzles these girls have put together. I can't tell you what they are, but they are flipping amazing. Like, you have to figure out actually how to open, say, a box. Okay? It's not just, where is the key hidden? But it might not be a key. It might be a combination. It might be a response to a certain sound. It might be a secret code. It could be anything. And oh my gosh, we are having so much fun with this.
It sounds like a great group project. Yeah.
Oh, it is. It is. So we're going to have about 200 authors in Burbank in October stuck in a room trying to figure out this murder mystery.
Oh, there's going to be so much laughter. Oh,
oh my gosh. It's going to be a blast. And we've set it in the 1930s aboard a cruise ship.
Oh.
And you only have, you know, after the murder takes place, you've got an hour to figure out who done it before we hit Tijuana. And the murderer can escape. So, but we've got lots of volunteers, wonderful volunteers. So we've got like gangsters and gangster malls and hookers and cigarette girls and,
goodness.
And mafia tough guys and
so are the authors
lounge singers. And, oh my God, it's so much fun.
Are the authors going to take these roles or is it?
Yes. I've got people lined up to take these roles. Oh, yes. Fantastic. And I'm not going to say who's who. I can't say who's who. You just have to come to IndieScribe and find out.
It sounds like a lot of fun.
Yeah. Well, one of our characters is named Lola Love Buttons.
Oh, no.
And then we have Tito Sarducci, and we've got Sunshine, and we've got Trixie. It's just so much fun. Anyway, okay. I digress.
Well, no, that's all right. I just don't want to keep you because I know you've got another meeting. So mm-hmm. just quickly, can you tell us what you're reading yourself right now, or do you have time?
What I am reading right now is Judith McNaught's book. Where is it? Hang on, let me pull it up. I know it's a Judith McNaught book. Mm-hmm. I just can't remember the title. It says something Kingdom. Oh. So there we go. There's iBooks. A Kingdom of Dreams by Judith McNaught, and it's hard to put down. It is amazing.
Oh, cool.
Amazing. Love, love, love it.
Great.
So one of the things that I've done recently with my author friends, Tanya Crosby and Catherine Levesque, is we started an online book club. And no, we're not touting our own books. We're talking about other books. Like we just did the last month's book was The Falcon and the Flower by Virginia Hensley. And mm-hmm. she was able to come online and do a chat with readers.
Oh, that's fantastic.
And we call it Read Between the Vines. And we've got a website. And then we've got the Facebook club. And then every month we pick a different book. And we discuss it. We talk about it. We also recommend a wine. Now, I'm not a wine drinker. I'm a whiskey drinker. So maybe when it's my turn, it might not be wine. It'll probably be whiskey.
So is that read between the lines or read between
vines,
the vines?
Vines, like a grapevine.
Ah, gotcha. Okay.
Yeah, Read Between the Vines. Okay. So it's a wine and book club.
Oh, I love it.
Book club.
Great. I'm going to look that one up for sure.
Well, there you go.
I can't thank you enough for coming on the show. It's been an amazing, amazing interview.
Well, thank you for having me. I truly do appreciate it.
And it's been a pleasure and an honor to talk to you. And I hope we talk again.
Oh, we will. And thank you. I really appreciate it. And you've asked some really great questions. And I've really enjoyed this. I truly have.
Okay. Well, I'll let you know when it goes live.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that.
And all of Susan Tisdale's contact information is in the show notes for those listening. So mm-hmm. thanks again, Susan. Bye-bye for now.
Thank you, honey. You have a great and blessed day, okay?
Thank you. You too.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Thanks for listening. Now it's your turn. What did you think about today's topic? You can leave comments on my website or email me directly. I'd love to hear from you. If you want to know more about me, check out my podcast website, bloodsweatandwords.com. Sign up for my weekly newsletter, which contains writing tips and information about upcoming podcasts. Now, if you really, really enjoyed the show, and I hope you did, consider becoming one of my patrons through Patreon and help me pay my podcasting bills. I've set up three tiers, the Loony, a $1 a month pledge, the Toonie, a $2 a month pledge, and the Big Beaver, a $5 or more a month pledge. Yes, I am Canadian. For the Loony, named after the Canadian $1 coin, which has a loon on it, you will get my undying appreciation, a thank you note, and the knowledge that listeners like you keep this podcast going. For the Toonie, named after the Canadian $2 coin, you'll get all of that, plus access to all Q&A episodes. And for the Big Beaver, named after the beaver on the Canadian 5-cent coin, you will get all of the Toonie goodies, plus the opportunity to read and make comments on my nonfiction books before they're published. Your name will appear on the acknowledgements page as a beta reader. And that, my friends, is a wrap. Be careful out there.